Hello, dear friends, and welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. It's me, Duncan Trussell, reporting in from Los Angeles, California. Last week, I went to Little Cumberland Island, which is this beautiful little island off the coast of Georgia. And when I say beautiful, I mean like God's finger is jutting down from heaven and touching this place. It's beautiful in that it contact with that level of beauty alters you in some way, and in a way that you, I don't think anything else can alter you in that way. There's a communication that happens when you get into nature. There's a connection or some kind of convergence that happens with you and the rest of the planet that is still wild. They say that pigs, when they escape and get out into the wild, they actually change. Their hair color changes. They grow bigger. They go feral. And there's something about going into nature where you can feel the very beginning phases of this process. You can imagine when you're out in nature, out in the wild, what would happen if you were there for 3 more months. And then you think, well, what would happen to me if I were there for 8 more months? And you realize that a lot of the heaviness and the weight that you carry around with you, that is a weight that results from living in a place of high population density, probably doing activities that in that setting seem natural, but from a greater viewpoint are incredibly unnatural and absurd. For example, driving, getting into a big metal house carriage and merging with the machinery so that you are guiding this missile down black strips of concrete where you are guided by the fluctuation of stoplights and stop signs and other people who have been sucked into this strange arterial pulsation of metal and flesh that comprises the circuitry of most towns and cities. That's insane compared to what the rhythm of nature is, which is at this island, Little Cumberland Island, it's dictated by the tides, the inflow and outflow of water from the ocean. And the tides determine where you can go on the beach and when you can take boats out and when you can fish. And just being in the presence of that, which is a kind of deeper truth, just being in the presence of that kind of tide or that kind of fluctuation creates a very soothing and calming effect that seems like something that should be a regular part of your experiential diet. But it's something we all forget. I mean, you could stay in the city. You could be in a city for 4 years and never leave the city and not even think about it. Barely even think about it. You can get so sucked into to the artificial tide of modern living, of which you're just one particulate sort of breathing in and out with the tide of capitalism and commerce, which makes up civilization. Not that that's nothing's truly unnatural. I know I said, I think I said unnatural. Cars aren't unnatural. They're no more unnatural than pigs. But I guess they're a few steps removed from the primacy of nature. And when you plug into that, it's very healing and very beautiful, especially when you plug into that and mix it with technology. Because on this island, the only way to get around are four-wheelers. And holy shit, that is fun. That is so fun. There's nothing I can think of that is more delightful than riding down beach paths on a four-wheeler and exploring a basically abandoned island. So this is where my mom spent a lot of time, especially a lot of time as she was dying, and it was her the place that she loved more than any other place on Earth, and it's the place she wanted her ashes scattered. So I went to this island with my brother and my brother's wonderful wife and my brother's wonderful dog, and we went into a dune field and scattered my mom's ashes, and it was so beautiful and so perfect. I could really feel her there. She was there, and it was more than just a ritual. It was more than just a symbolic gesture. There was a sense of completion to it, and just a feeling of peace that came from it. I feel so much better now, because I kind of went into like a depression, which is something that I've dealt with my whole life. I go in and out of depressions, and I had gone into this pretty dark place, and something about the experience and going to this island started this process, which now I feel much better, and I feel like, you know, a chapter has closed in my life. And a new chapter is starting, which is super exciting, because my brother is about to have a baby in December, and that's a really beautiful thing, and something I'm really excited about. A friend of mine was talking about how when you get older, if you have a baby, it's a really beautiful thing, because once you get to a certain age, everyone around you just starts dropping like flies. There's no way around it. Everyone around you, the fruit starts falling off the tree and right into the Grim Reaper's mouth. He chomps up your relatives and loved ones right in front of you and shits them into the grave. So there's something really nice about having a new little pinky growing out of the garden of eternity, because it is the reversal of the entropic force that sucks us all back into the soil and turns us into flowers, trees, worms, moths, and all the other variety of life that, well, I guess everything turns us into everything. So that was really nice, and I'm sorry for not getting a podcast out, but that's what I've been up to, and I suppose that's a good excuse, even though there's no real excuse for not getting a podcast out, except for my own laziness. I can't really pretend that some form of insane busyness has kept me from doing this thing. I think that's a tendency I have. I like to delude myself into thinking that the reason I haven't produced something I want to produce is because of some state of busyness that I'm in. But the truth of the matter is, it's usually because of procrastination and some form of distraction that has happened. So I apologize. But that seems to be part of who I am, and I imagine that it will continue to be a pattern in my life for probably a very long time. Maybe not. I hope not. Okay, so there's that. Now, here's a big announcement that I want to make, and I am now officially sending out a cry for help from the internet, from those of you who listen to this podcast. I want to tell you about an idea that came to me, and it's an idea that for a thing that will transform podcasts forever, but it's a thing that I can't do on my own. Here's my idea. A few days ago, I ordered an Oculus Rift. For those of you who don't know what an Oculus Rift is consumer-based VR goggles that apparently create the illusion of being fully immersed inside a virtual environment, whether that in virtual environment is a video game, whether the virtual environment is whatever 3D space. There's all kinds of examples of what people are developing for this technology on the internet. A quick Google search will show you a variety of apps that they have for the thing now, including the experience of being beheaded. You can go to an Italian villa, and I think they've even ported the game Half-Life so that you can use Half-Life in conjunction with the Oculus Rift and run around shooting things. I'm sure there's other things that are on the horizon, and eventually, I wouldn't be surprised if this became the new television. People who I know who've placed the thing on say this is going to do to society what TV did to society. It's going to completely transform the way that we absorb media, and not just that, but it's going to transform the way that we create, because the combination of the Oculus Rift with motion sensing technology like the new Kinect for Windows or even hacked Xbox 360 Kinects allows you to... Sorry, that humming you might hear in the background is my little Roomba, my robot slave, cleaning for me. But the combination of the Oculus Rift with motion sensing technology can allow you to model and mold things in three-dimensional space. And then this combined with the 3D printers that are coming out would allow you theoretically to mold parts to create tools or art or anything that you wanted and then print those things out. And that's where we're headed. There's a great video by Elon Musk, who is the president of Tesla. I don't know, maybe the king of Tesla. Not sure what his title is, but he's the same fella who is working on the Hyperloop, which is a type of tube, like a suction tube that apparently will allow us to get from LA to New York in a couple of hours max. And he's also working on a lot of other disruptive technologies. But there's a great video that I will post at DuncanTrussell.com on this podcast where you can kind of watch him go through all these emergent technologies that he thinks are going to be incremental aspects of Western civilization over the next century. So here's what I need help doing. This is what I want to do. I want to create a virtual space where people can come and watch podcasts being recorded live in a 3D virtual environment. So the reason I want to do this, there's a lot of reasons I want to do this. I think that people really enjoy seeing podcasts live. I know with Rogan's podcast, they stream it and lots of people tune in to watch it live and to interact while it's happening and talk about the various topics that the guests are discussing. And there's this interactive element to it that's super cool. But the way that the media gets consumed is in 2D space by watching the video, which is great. But I think that the next logical step is to actually be in a 3D environment surrounded by other people who are watching the podcast. And if you wanted to, you could put on an Oculus Rift and then you could look around and actually be in this environment as though you were in an auditorium or whatever environment was designed for the particular podcast that you decided to go and watch. Then you could add to that the ability to shift the perspective. So instead of seeing what was happening from your POV as your avatar in this virtual space watching the podcast happen, you could shift your POV to the one of the guests or to the host and see what they were looking at or see their view of this virtual environment. The other thing that this technology would do is it would remove the boundary between the podcast and the audience. So, you know, if your podcast gets 60,000 downloads an episode, then you know that's a lot of people, but you don't really have a visual representation of what those people look like. You know, the most people I've ever performed for in my life has been something like 3,000 people, 3,300 people. I was featuring for Rogan in Chicago, and I'll never forget that experience. The experience of being in front of a wall of just a wall, like wall of human beings combined with whatever terrible potent marijuana Rogan had given me before I went on stage, gave the impression that I was talking to some giant deity composed of human molecules that had all merged together into the form of an audience. And that was wild. It was wild. This is an experience that I think can happen with these emergent technologies, so that podcasters and their guests can actually get some digitized representation of the audience that they're performing for. I can't think of anything more psychedelic and exciting than being able to put on my Oculus Rift, to put the give my guest an Oculus Rift, and to look out at an auditorium or room or cavern or canyon or alien planet or whatever terrain we decided to use, and see all of you in whatever visual form that you decided to take. Not all of you will be humans. Some of you could be robots, vampires, unicorns, whatever you wanted to be. Some of you could be flying in hot air balloons, drifting through the sky. Some of you could be birds. But it would be a wonderful thing to be able to look out in a 3D environment at the listeners of this podcast. And I think other podcasters would utilize this technology too. So this is what I want to do. I want to create the first crowdsourced, I don't know if it's the first crowdsourced, but a crowdsourced project. And I know that there are people out there listening who can help me do this. I don't know how to do this. I just have the idea in my head. And I know that there's certain places where this idea has been explored. For example, in Second Life, there are live shows in Second Life. I've seen them. To me, they're not very exciting because as far as I know, there's no real motion tracking technology going into the performance, which means that any movement that is happening from the avatar is sort of pre-recorded animations that their avatar can go through. I think that for this to really be effective, what we would need is three things. Number one, we need a virtual environment that is accessible to anybody who has a computer, regardless of the computer's operating system. So Second Life definitely seems like a potential environment to develop this technology inside of. Number two, we need motion sensing technology that can in immediately transfer the movements of the guest and the podcaster into their avatars. So if I lift my arm, then my avatar lifts his arm. Or if my guest moves in some way, the avatar would in some way replicate that movement. Ideally, it would even be able to scan the face and transfer facial gestures or facial movements into the avatar. I know that not all of this stuff is probably available or accessible right now, but I think that it will be. And I think we might as well be the ones who start developing this. So we need a virtual space, potentially Second Life or some other virtual space that I'm not aware of. We need a motion tracking technology that can scan, that can track the motions of the guests to the avatar that is in the virtual environment. And then we need this technology to be compatible with the Oculus Rift, so that people in the audience, if they have a Rift, can actually be in 3D space and the guest and the podcaster can also experience this in three-dimensional space. Those are the first three major components that we need for this thing to work. And I want to send out the call to all of you so that we can all start working together to make this thing happen. Many of you might already know how to do this. This shit might already exist. I don't know. I've done some searching and I can't find anything that is instantly accessible. I don't know how to code. So I don't know. And also I don't know how to get my Xbox, the Kinect, to work in this way. I tried. I don't know how to do it. I did buy a very nice PC though, so that I wouldn't be limited by the constraints of Apple. I do have that, and I have a Rift coming, and I do have an Xbox Kinect. So I have these components, but I need help. I want this to be an open source project. So I want this to be the sort of thing that once we figure out how to do it, it can be packaged and downloaded by anyone who wants to do podcasts in virtual environments. I want this to be completely accessible to anyone who wants to do this, and at no charge, so that any podcaster out there can utilize this technology to do their shows in live virtual space. That's the goal. This isn't for profit. This is only for expanding and evolving the medium that is currently known as podcasting. You guys know that podcasting isn't just podcasting. Podcasting is a flower on this tree of technology that is growing into time. It is so much more than a one-sided form of entertainment. This is a podcasts have communities that grow around them, and many of my best friends are people that I've met doing this podcast or guests that I've had on this podcast. They're much more than just podcasts, and I think that if we all work together, that we can evolve them to the next level, which is, to me, creating environments where listeners can gather together in 3D space, watch a podcast get recorded live, and then afterwards hang out together in 3D space, and we could all hang out, which would be pretty awesome, so that people all over the world, instead of having to wait for the podcaster to come through and do a comedy tour or to come through and do a live recording of the podcast, can immediately not just enjoy watching the podcast get recorded live, but get to interact with other people who like the podcast as well. The technology exists right now for this stuff to happen. We just need to weave it together in a way that we just need to fuse it together. We need these three components. We need someone who's good at organizing these kinds of projects. We need coders, designers, developers, philosophers, technologists. Anybody out there who just has an idea. You don't even have to understand technology. But if you just have some instinct or impulse as to how we can make this sort of thing work, if you know people that we can connect with, if you know people who work for Oculus Rift, if you know people who work for Second Life, if you know people who work for some other company that could help facilitate this thing, then contact me. There's a contact form at duncantrussell.com. Contact me and let me know your idea. The first thing that I need is somebody who's good at organizing this sort of thing. Someone who maybe has created this software, has created this sort of thing before. And the people involved in this have to just be interested in furthering the medium of podcasts. I'm sure that other stuff will come if we can really figure out how to do this. I'm sure there'll be all kinds of weird benefits that come from this. But the main reason for doing it is just so that we can further the unifying aspect of technology, the way that technology loves to bring things together. So that's my idea. Go to duncantrussell.com if you can help with this, and let me know who you are, what you can do, how you can help, and I'm sure that if we all put our heads together, we can get this thing created fairly quickly. And before you know it, those of you who have a computer will be able to go watch the Duncan Trussell Family Hour and hopefully other podcasts who adopt this technology recorded in virtual space. This is my dream. I want to do it. Let's do it. I'm sick of being trapped by the cruel time-space continuum that keeps me locked down in one place and makes it so that I can only do this podcast in my human form inside of my house instead of doing the podcast as a Godzilla in some kind of alien environment surrounded by all of you who have taken on whatever specific avatar you want to represent yourself as. I think this is something that Terrence Jesus Christ McKenna would have loved to see happen. And I think it's something that is in the spirit of the emergent technologies that we are so lucky to get to witness being born in our lifetimes. Help me. Join me. Go to DuncanTrussell.com. Go to the contact form. Send me a message if you're a coder, designer, developer, anyone who has any interest in helping with this project, an organizer, someone who has experience organizing this kind of thing. I'm throwing it out to the universe in the hopes that just by planting this seed in the fabric of what could be, this space will grow and we'll all be able to hang out together. So there you go. Today we have a great podcast. First, a little business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Sure Design T-shirts. Oh, God. God. Sure Design T-shirts create shirts so very soft. So soft. When they touch the skin, it feels as though the snake that brought truth to those two primitive savage shitheads in the Garden of Eden was slithering along your body and whispering in your ear, "Eat the fruit. Don't let that old man trick you into thinking that you gotta stay in the dark to be happy." Yes, the feeling of Sure Design T-shirts is the feeling of the serpent in the Garden of Eden sliding up and down your body, whispering dark secrets into your ear. Why are these shirts so soft? The shirts are so soft because at Sure Design T-shirts in Thailand, they have a orgasmic echo chamber, which actually amplifies the orgasm of pagans who are constantly making love within the chamber. These pagans have been sprayed with aerosolized MDMA. They've been inhaling psilocybin vapors and so are in a constant state of orgiastic ecstasy. Their orgasms are translated, digitized, and used in a mixture of semen, tears, and fuck sweat to create the very soft, soft fabric that Sure Design T-shirts is famous for. Don't believe me? Order one of the shirts. Go to SureDesignT-shirts.com. If you put my name in, Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, you'll get 10% off these wonderful shirts, and you will be wearing come to the yoga studio. And who wouldn't want to do that? We're also sponsored by Amazon.com. If you are going to order something from Amazon, and by the way, Amazon has everything. Everything. Everything you could want is there. Anything that we talk about on this podcast, you can order it from Amazon.com. I just ordered a beautiful Zen bell. Want to hear it? I don't know if you can hear that. It rings for a very long time. It's good for meditating. For some reason, bells really go hand in hand with meditating. I'm not sure what it is. It's just kind of like a palate cleanser. It's like a subjective palate cleanser. It also makes my dog bark. But when you're meditating, it's nice to ring a bell when you start and ring a bell when you finish. I don't know why. That's my new little friend, Fox. I don't know if you guys heard him barking, but I have this wonderful, sweet dog that I am now 100% deeply in love with. His name's Fox. He's a rescue dog. He teaches me not to be selfish. Anyway, from Amazon.com, you can get anything. Temple bells. You can get deodorant. You can get garbage bags. If you sign up for Amazon Prime, they will deliver this stuff to you the next day. So if you're an introverted recluse like I am, it's a very wonderful service. Because I don't enjoy going to Target and touching things that unidentified babies have had diarrhea on. That doesn't happen when you go to Amazon.com. And if you're going to go to Amazon.com, go through the portal at DuncanTrussell.com. It's on any podcast episode. If you click on it, there's a portal there. You click on that thing, order whatever you're going to order, and they, for some unknown reason, honestly, I'm still confused about it, they give me a percentage, a small percentage of the price of the item that you buy. I don't know how much longer they're going to do it. It seems like someone at Amazon got drunk or did too much cocaine and decided to do this thing. I don't get it. But I guess there's some kind of advertising value in this, but it seems like everyone already knows about Amazon.com. Regardless, please go through the portal if you're going to buy something from Amazon. It's a great way for you to support this podcast. Some other ways to support this podcast are to buy a shirt. The store is now stocked with new posters, t-shirts, and a variety of other stickers and lots of other stuff. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com, go through the shop, you can see those shirts and posters. And I would very much appreciate it if you'd pick one up. There's also a donation button. And for those of you who have been donating, thank you. I am so very grateful to you for supporting this podcast. And it is really, really intense to think that so many of you are willing to help the podcast in that way. That it's fucking beautiful, and God bless you. I will try to put out more episodes than I currently am for you and for all of you, not just the donators or the Amazon shoppers or the people who buy stuff from the store or the people who buy Sure Design t-shirts, but for just those of you who listen. I love you, and my life is a million times more exciting and beautiful because of the strange connection that I have to all of you through this podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you will continue to listen and forgive me for the sound quality of this podcast that's about to happen, because this podcast was recorded with one of my best friends, Emil Amos, as he was driving to Chicago in his car. So you're going to hear some background noise on this podcast, but this is an unavoidable aspect of being trapped in space and time, because we can't teleport yet, and a lot of people I'd like to have conversations with are in some other part of this dimension, far away from LA. So that's the price of the thing. Just appreciate the how amazingly wonderful it is that we can, that the technology exists today to even have a conversation with someone driving in a car hundreds of miles away over the phone and record that. That's pretty amazing. It's not going to take the fuzz out, but at least we can do it. Today's guest is in a lot of different bands. He's in a band called Lilacs. Is it Lilacs or Lilacs? And Champagne. He's in a band called The Grails. He's in a band called The Holy Sons. And he's in a band called Ohm. And what's super exciting is Emil is about to release an album called Lost Decade 2, which has a lot of songs that he recorded when he and I were in college. And one of the songs on this album is a song we sang together. And I've heard it, and it's awesome. My voice was a little better back in the day, I think. But yeah, I'm really excited about that. And also, we've been talking about possibly even recording our own album in next spring, which I am so excited about. And I've already been recording embarrassing songs on my iPhone in the hopes that one of them could be used for this recording session in April. I'm going to have links to Emil's on tour right now. I highly recommend that you go see him perform. I would put that in front of doing pretty much anything else. If he's coming to your town, definitely, definitely go to the show, because the type of music he creates is beautiful and eerie and has the wonderful effect of being pleasing to hear, but also in some way it creates a mood or a feeling that is very unique. I'll just put it that way. You should definitely go watch him perform. That sounded so weird. And that's, it's good music. Just go see him perform. So now, everyone, please welcome to the Doug Guttrussell Family Hour, the sweet Lord of Glory himself, Emil Amos. Hey everybody, I'm here with my friend Emil Amos, and he's driving to Chicago right now. So what you're hearing in the background is the sound of Emil's car, I guess. What kind of car are you driving these days, friend?
I bought a Mercedes-Benz in a kind of random occurrence. A few years ago with some of the first, like, music money I saved up. And I'll tell you, it's the best thing I've ever bought in my entire life, hands down, that nothing can compare.
What year?
It's a 99. Some rich old woman had clearly driven it to the grocery store a few times, and it had like 60,000 miles on it, and I was... This is such a weird opening conversation, but I needed to buy a car, and I was just looking around at your basic, what do bohemians usually buy, like a Honda, what's it called? There's like an Accord or something, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, the idea is that you're not supposed to care about your car.
Right. And because I was living in Portland, everybody was kind of looking for that kind of thrifty, you know, liberal automobile, and so I just accidentally stumbled onto these deals where, like, gangsters would be selling Mercedes-Benz outside of the city. Sorry, I'm driving, so if you hear a fiery death, it's probably me. But so anyway, yeah, I kind of sort of stumbled onto the fact that nobody looks for nice cars, you know, in that kind of environment, and like all these rich people in outlying areas are just liquidating them because they're always buying like the brand new ones. So this random dude from his house just sold it to me for like $6,000, and I'm telling you, just go look for them. They're like sitting there everywhere. Nobody thinks, I mean, they're fucking great cars. Anyway, moving on. That was a strange opening.
I don't think it's that strange, because we started talking about the idea that you're not supposed to care about your car, which is interesting to me. You know, there's like all these unwritten rules of how you're supposed to be if you're a bohemian.
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird thing for me, because I had made jokes for years with some of my band buddies that, like, you know, it'd be absurd if an underground musician could pull up to his shitty little shows with like gold rims and a super nice car. And my stomach almost turned when I got in it for the first time, and I thought it was stolen. I thought the guy was totally selling it to me, and I actually, right when I signed the paper, I was like, is it possible this is a stolen car? And he just looked at me. He's like, how could I sell you a stolen car from my house? And I was like, okay, here's the cash. I gave him cash and just drove off.
Have you ever seen any of Riff Raff's videos?
Yeah, I totally follow him. I just found out yesterday that he's going to be on the new Celebrity Rehab. I'm kind of excited. I'm going to watch the shit out of that.
You know, man, I love Celebrity Rehab because it's the modern-day version of the stocks. You know, like, it's where you go to pay penance for your sins. It's like, I've been thinking a lot about how addiction is the opposite of enlightenment for people. It's like, you know how, like, to get enlightened, there's these rules that have to happen? you know, generally, like, you need some event to happen that makes you enlightened. You know, you've got to do a series of actions, or you run into a holy man, or you have an ayahuasca experience. And all these things are really just, they give you an excuse to live a better life. And for an addict, if they, what they call a relapse is like, if I have one drink of alcohol, you don't understand what I will begin to do. But it really is like more like, okay, once you have that drink, now you can sort of consign, you can give your responsibility over to this demon that you have, that has now possessed your body, and it gives you an excuse to go on a rampage. You know what I mean? And then once you've gone on this demonic rampage long enough, as a penance, you go to rehab. And then when you go to rehab, there's an exorcism that happens where the demon is beaten back into some little part of yourself, and you're let out into the world having this new humility.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like a lot of the clinically depressed people I've known, they seem like they're kind of secretly getting off on their get-out-of-jail-free pass a little bit. I mean, that's a pretty potentially offensive thing to say, but I've seen people. Do you know that scene with James Franco in Freaks and Geeks where he like keeps pretending like he can't read and he was a poor kid and all that stuff?
I don't, but that's awesome.
Well, when he gets put under the gun by the school, like, guidance counselors and stuff, he just, like, he fake cries and he says, don't pick on me. I've got learning disabilities and you know what I mean? And so then the girl keeps figuring out, like, that he does that whenever he's put under the microscope and he needs to take responsibility. He flinches and turns and goes into like a fetal position and starts crying, and everybody feels sorry for him. And that's totally like the metaphor. I've seen people who diet, they like the diagnosis. They use it for getting what they want sometimes, you know?
Fuck yeah, you do. And it's terrible. But the real question is, why is it that when in a position to not be an asshole, you know, like when you kind of watch yourself go into this series of actions that are all shitty. What is that? Why do we do that?
Well, I was gonna say something else that goes back to that, but you know, I often think this sentence out loud in my head that you know, all philosophy, psychology, religion, the original pursuit was for man to become objective to himself, you know, to achieve some form of objectivity where you grasp some form of truth, you know, and you're free of the subjective, I don't know what you would call it, not necessarily as dramatic as a prison, but in that, it's kind of the same question. You can ask that question in so many different ways, but you're sort of asking, what is that where we lose our objectivity and we melt down into some sort of selfish id or something, right?
Yes.
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know, man. I don't know. But I do think that it's a always a decision. You know, like, you always will feel this, like, growing crescendo of reactivity. So you get into the, you know, kind of like the, you put your hand on a hot item, and then as the heat increases, eventually you'll jerk your hand away. But it's like inside of you there's some kind of pressure or some kind of poison. Inside of me, there's like a poisonous thing that will start emerging. And objectively, I'll look at it and think, oh, you're just a sadist. Or, wow, look at you. You're just kind of a sociopath right now. Because, like, it reminds me of this Louis C.K. joke that I heard where he talks about how he was in his apartment complex and he didn't look like he belonged in the apartment complex. So this guy was like complaining. The guy said to him, "You don't belong in this apartment complex. What are you doing here?" And he went along with it, like he didn't live there, because he wanted the, you know, the conflict with the guy, and he wanted to watch the. Anyway, I'm ruining a Louis C.K. joke in an awful way, but the point is that thing where you realize that you are getting off on conflict. You're getting off on being an asshole. You're getting off on the negativity. You know, my point is you can see that you're not a victim of it. You're actually creating these problems because you're getting a mental hard-on from it.
Well, to be fair, though, because we sound like everybody's making excuses and they're really making decisions. I mean, there is some level of mental health, you know, that's a real dynamic. And so I could definitely say for me in my life, like when I didn't have problems of my own and I felt healthy and happy, I was excited to help other people. And I was willing and interested in their problems and making life easier for them. And the more I sank back into any of my own depression, the less time and energy I, as a ratio, had for other people in general. So I think that, you know, some people, sometimes you have problems and you are not able to treat other people with basic respect. And certainly when you're walking down the street and you see a schizophrenic guy, you know, who's been wearing the same clothes for like 18 years, you know, he's got food dripping out of his mouth and stuff. I mean, you don't expect for that guy to operate at the same standard, you know, as the next guy, because he is inundated with brain chemistry that is literally holding him back, you know, in the larger whatever spectrum. And so, I mean, I think that's a real dynamic, you know, and some people might need to take drugs. I'm not trying to sound so callous, but within that, there's a whole different continuum of people somehow using it. So I think both are going on, you know, but just to clarify.
Okay, yeah, I get that, and I agree with you. There is definitely the biocomputer malfunctions. We get imbalances in serotonin, and it creates a kind of depressive state. I get that. But what about let's take all those people and like put them in a different place. But no, don't put them in a different place, because it's still, again, you still have a choice. The schizophrenic, aside from the schizophrenic where you're just in a seizure, you're in like a mental seizure of madness and your whole world has turned into a kind of echo chamber / kaleidoscope that is just this melting swirl of colors and sounds. Okay, whatever that person's experience is, that person, I don't know how that person can be expected to react to that in any normal way. But I'm saying on this depression, manic depression, or any of the so-called mental illnesses, I still feel like there's a choice that gets made about how you're going to react, because we are taught to base our actions on feeling. And if you're feeling bad, then you base your actions on that feeling. And can't you just, instead of basing your actions on feeling, start basing your actions on an ethic?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's a dicey, we're diving into a pretty judgmental atmosphere, because it's all about that becomes all about your estimation of like how much another person is being truly honest with you and or trying to find. I'm definitely talking about people who are looking for the easiest way out, and like they'll take or use anything, you know, that dynamic that we all resort to sometimes, where you'll basically cry wolf or do anything to get out of your responsibilities. I think that's what you're talking about. too. And like, and then you're talking about the perverse enjoyment of brutalizing other people too.
Yeah, that's right. The perverse enjoyment of brutalizing other people. And then how there's like a dog inside of you that when it, for whatever reason, it just lunges and attacks. And then all of a sudden you do all this damage in the world and you have to sit and kind of, after it's all over, you come back to yourself again and you look at what you've done and you're like, well, I'm just a fucking asshole. Like, you know, like, well, what do I do now? How do you make up for it? How do you go to somebody that you're complete asshole to and like fix it? You can't. Generally, and so that's where rehab comes in, you know.
Right. That's what they get you to do in AA, right? They get you to write letters to everybody you fucked over and own up to all of it.
Yeah, yeah. You make your amends, is what it's called. But it's this kind of ceremonial way of purifying the actions that you made when you were in a reactive state.
Some sort of patch of Pennsylvania wooded shit that's breaking the call up.
It's okay. I got you. To get right back where we're at. So you go to rehab as this, or you do AA and rehab, and the idea of addiction are this, it's a kind of modern take on how to deal with demonic possession. You know, it's symbols that are used to sort of rationalize why you went into a place where you were a complete monster for however long. And you lost control to this other part of yourself. And I just think that's a really interesting thing, man, because, you know, it's like a penance or something. It's like a, you know, that's why in Christianity they have baptism, you know, and you're born again, washed in the blood of Christ. And that's why they have the confessional chamber, you know, because it's like we need a way to subjectively feel as though we've cleansed ourselves when we do really bad things. And
yeah, I don't think there's anything particularly, I mean, some of those might be outdated modes of psychotherapy or something, but like the Jungian, you know, concept of having to posit unconscious content into the consciousness to grow and individuate yourself. I mean, that does seem like it's just part of like Buddha's path, you know, is like he did some things wrong and then he has to get outside of himself, get objective and take a hard look at himself. I mean, that seems like it's part of all of our stories. I mean, everybody tests the boundaries as a child and then tries to learn from touching the burner, right?
Yeah. And you touch the burner and you get burnt. But, you know, like, I'm tired of, like, learning that way. You know, that's that thing where you sort of, after you're sitting in a pile of wreckage that used to be a relationship, and you're looking at it and thinking, well, I learned something here. It's like, pathetic. You know, like, I learned something here, but how many more times and that's just a way to make you feel better for falling prey to the destructive impulse. So,
well, I mean, you know, when you're listening to a friend tell you that they've changed and you know, with certain friends, you know, in your heart that they will never, ever achieve that objectivity. There's certain people, you know that they, it's not necessarily that they're lying flat out, but that they don't have the capability. You know it. You know that before they die, they will never figure it out. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's certain people like that, and then certain people have a higher ceiling. Like, you can just feel their potential, you know?
This is why I think that like, what you just said, the idea of a predestined state of, you know, being in the darkness. Is it true? What is the redemptive state? Like, how do you achieve redemption if you exist in a world where God is dead, or where people don't really believe in God, or where everything just seems to be symbolic anyway, how do you achieve redemption? I was just reading this book by Chogyam Trungpa, talking about the transmission of that happens in Buddhism or in the guru-disciple relationship. And he said, you know, the guru, that they'll do all these things that probably are ultimately just meaningless, but it creates the conditions for a person to let go of themselves. You know, and he tells this story of a famous Buddhist, teacher, and how he found enlightenment was he had heard about, someone told him, oh, there's this great saint living in this fishing village, so go talk to him. And he went to the fishing village and he asked people, hey, have you heard of this saint? I can't remember his name. And they're like, oh yeah, I know, we know who you're, that we know that name, but he's just this homeless guy who lives by the river eating scraps of fish. I mean, like, he eats scraps and he's dirty. We don't know that he's enlightened. So he went down and he found this guy and he sat with him, and the guy was just kind of ignoring him. And then finally the guy was like, okay, follow me. And then the guy just tortured him for like 9 years straight, 9 years of just absolute torture. and then at the end of the 9 years, they were sitting together and the guy slapped him with his sandal in the face. And that was when he received the transmission and became enlightened. The whole point of the thing is, it's like the guy, those 9 years of suffering, were they really necessary for this person to decide to be a better you know what I mean? Like, we all have these conditions that we need to meet before we can become the ultimate version of ourselves, especially if we're chained down by guilt or if we're at the end of a series of bad decisions. It feels weird to suddenly be like, you know what? I'm just going to be an enlightened person for the rest of my life, and I'm going to start treating everyone around me with love.
Well, if you believe in the predestination side of things, which you kind of know that I tend to, then, you know, think about those, like, think about your awkward years in comedy, or for me, songwriting, where, you know, sometimes it seems like 5 years can go by and you're just not seizing, you're not focusing the lens on the perfect way to articulate your sentiment or something. So take that 5 years and say that you are in a cave in the Himalayas, or you are being tortured by a dirty fisherman. I mean, maybe you just needed 5 years for you to internally, you know, evolve into, you know, the summation. You had to meditate yourself on, you know, your own reason for articulating in general, or your reason for being, or your place in the larger spectrum of consciousness, you know. And maybe that all the other stuff, like you implied, is arbitrary. It doesn't matter that you went to college necessarily, or that you dated this person and not that person. Maybe it just takes a long time, and where you are is relative, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like there's a, you know, this in this book, it says that there's a, you know, behind the scenes in your mind, there are all these connections that are slowly being made. And you're not aware that the connections are being made. And then suddenly when you've hit the right number of connections, and that's when you see the grand vision of life and wake up. But you can't just do it. That's what's funny to me, is it's like, let's say I'm sitting here and an alien craft descends in front of my window in my office and opens up, like it opens up, and in the middle of the alien craft is an angelic being that merges with my mind and forgives everything I've ever done. Now I get to be a good person again for the rest of my life. Why do I need that? Why do I need a fisherman? Why do I need connections to be made? Isn't it clear enough? Why is this thing like, oh no, we have to wait. why can't we just be like, no, you know, I'm just going to be, from now on, I'm just going to be a loving person.
Because, I mean, your ego tells you that you're done evolving, and you're, maybe you are in touch with the part of yourself that has the potential to be a wonderful person, but maybe you still have evolving to do. I mean, have you ever seen a friend of yours that's horrible with women and treats, you know, relationship after relationship horribly? Think about someone besides yourself. Think about a friend of yours that you've seen making mistakes over and over, and think about, like, what your estimation was of his destiny at the time. I mean, literally picture one of your friends, and I think...
I am definitely the worst at relationships.
Just for this moment, try to picture someone else, and because I've thought about that before, like someone who's making a very consistent error, you know, someone who is maybe too into the way women look, and you know, or some particular thing that's not letting them truly fall in love. You know, it just seems to me that the only answer, first of all, my first assumption often is like, oh, this person's fucked for the rest of their life. They're never, ever going to figure it out. I mean, certain people where you have an overwhelming emotional reaction to their atmosphere like that. It's just something that your instincts tell you. And yeah. Then my mind tells me, well, the only thing that can cure this person of these thinking errors and these objectification sort of diseases is more experience. They're going to have to burn down so many more relationships until they're just tired of objectifying someone else without actually letting them be who they really are and not wanting them to be someone else. They're going to have to go through a lot more until they burn out this weird, whatever it is, this aggression inside them that pushes themselves onto other people, you know? And I think experience is the way that you unfurl your destiny and your dormant psychology. So
that's
the only answer.
God, it's so dismal.
Well, I mean, aren't you just saying, like, you're sick of Jesus Christ? You're saying you're sick of waiting and you want it now. But, like, isn't that sort of a Four Noble Truths kind of thing where it's like the more you want it, the more the ropes will tighten around your wrists. Like, you have to just release yourself and, like, go with, you know, what you're dealt, which is largely what is sort of a manifest destiny. It's what you need, in a way.
Well, this is the other idea in this book, is that you can't think of this, like, you can't create in your mind this differentiation of, like, okay, here's a sacred state and here's a profane state. Every state is fertilizer that this thing can grow out of you. So you are supposed to look at the wreckage, the smoldering wreckage of all the various things that you might have shit-canned in your life or ruined, and see them for what they are, which are steps in the direction of this moment of freedom that we all that some of us dream about, which is that place where you really do just snap back into understanding. But maybe there isn't. Maybe that place isn't real. Maybe that's just that's a lie too. Maybe there's just people who are faking that place. You know, I don't think so. Ram Dass was pretty wide open and beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that for you, I mean, this is a pretty Sleepless in Seattle way to put it, but, like, for you, is it that you feel like you don't meet the right people, or that you actually literally ruin your own ability to open yourself and fall in love.
Yeah, I think that I just get really reactive and like I have all these like defense mechanisms that will spring up come out of the blue and just basically ruin a relationship. And then I'll be like alone again and then I'll feel lonely. And then I'll look at that and think, well, oh, this is just how you feel all the time. But when you're in a relationship, you think that this feeling is because of the relationship. And so then you try to get out of the relationship because you think this ache is coming from the relationship. But then the relationship is gone and you realize, oh, no, that wasn't it at all. Ache is still there. And then you're like, well, what the fuck is it? You know, if the answer isn't, if this is a thing that, you know, cannot be fixed through a relation, or it's not even fair to use a relationship to fix anything. Hello? Hey, where were we? First of all, you can't use a relationship as an you shouldn't be using a relationship to fix yourself anyway. That's, you know what I mean? You shouldn't be doing that. Like I remember there was a guy, one of the most horrifying things I ever saw was this guy who was a drunk and addicted to narcotics, and he had gotten a bartender pregnant, like from a one night stand, and she decided that she was going to keep the baby. And I can remember him drunk, his pockets stuffed with pills, looking at me from underneath this addiction and saying, "The baby is going to get is I'm excited to have the baby because it's going to make me stop drinking." And it was like, wow. It's so fucking sad.
What actually happened? It's like a modern morality play.
I don't know what happened, but I imagine that he I don't know. I mean, I guess my guess is things went really well for him, but
that's optimistic.
But my point is, it's like you there's this underlying ache that I have, and I think a lot of people have, and that ache is this thing that you are always licking, like a dog, like, you know, licking its paw or something. You're always trying to like soothe that ache. And so you try all these tricks to soothe the ache. You know, that's the first approach. It's like, all right, well, I'm going to get drunk, or I'm going to get on take narcotics. Oh, what do you know? That doesn't work. It just seems to create a momentary distraction. Then bam, you're back to the ache. And then you try relationships. And then through the relationship, you start thinking, oh, you forget about the ache. You think the ache is coming from the relationship. So then you're like, oh, God, I feel so stuck. I'm claustrophobic here. What have I done? Why have I wound myself up in this thing? It could never work. And then you destroy that, thinking that on the other side, there's going to be this sense of peacefulness. No, you're right back to where you were, back to the ache, and then back to licking the paw. And that's the endless cycle, the samsara, you know, the samsaric perpetuation of our own suffering.
Well, I would definitely differentiate between the need for love, which everybody has, and everybody ought to have, you know, love in their life to some degree, and then differentiate that from developmental, you know, problems that haven't really been resolved. You know, like those are two totally different things, and love doesn't cure, you know, your own internal issues. It's just a separate thing. You know, the need for love is a part of feeling healthy, but it's not meant to be a panacea, you know, for things that you need to resolve in your own world, which is, you know, probably why you have gone to therapists. It's like it's a different thing. It's a different mission, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the idea, I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand it at all. That's part of this, like, getting older is I just don't understand. I just more and more just realize I just don't understand anything. And then I always look back anytime I've been mean to someone in my life and I just think, oh, that was always a mistake. And then that makes me like it was never was it good to be an asshole to someone. You know, like general, it's like that old saying, no one's ever said, I'm so glad I had that fifth shot. The next day.
I'm so glad I got revenge or whatever.
Yeah. But the next day after you've gone drinking, no one's like, oh yeah, I really am glad we had that seventh beer. That was smart.
That's a great point. Yeah.
You know, so.
Look how much wiser you already are. I mean, I'm just saying, you know how many people never even perceive that? And you see them every day somehow carving their way through the world, destroying everything, and then they die. And they never have that realization. Isn't that like a profound beginning of understanding, though?
Yeah, I think that. But yeah, again, it's not a it's like... Yes, it's a beginning to understanding, but again, it's the kind of understanding of like a fucking, you know, trust fund kid who just burned a house down. You know,
no, I mean,
like,
I know what you're talking about, like the kinds of, like, yeah. I think Penance is pretty good, but like in a way, but you're talking about a kind of person that only feels bad when they're caught. That's not what you're doing. You feel genuinely bad. You want to change, you know?
Yeah. And you feel kind of like, you know, I'll think back to fights now that my mom has died. I'll think back to fights I got in with her and look at that in a kind of like shocked, stunned, like, man, you are so dumb. That was so dumb. To be like that. And then like I'll think about I've been kind of running through like a Rolodex of fights I've been in with people that I love trying to find one fight that made sense.
And a Rolodex of fights.
None of them make sense. And that's why I'm thinking more and more, and it's always the fights in the middle of the fight it makes so much sense. You're so justified, you know, and you feel so justified and confident and just filled with this hubris. And then after the emotions passed, you're just left sitting there looking at what you did. And you're like, oh, no, that was all wrong, all totally wrong. So that makes me start thinking, well, then I can't base what I do on emotions anymore. You know that.
Well, I think once a fight starts, once a real fight begins, and you feel, especially if like you're drunk, and you feel threatened, and you punch your hand through a window or something. I mean, at that point, your brain and your body is just telling you to protect yourself and defend yourself, and that's all. That's not. I don't know that that's necessarily a big part of like someone having a bad character or something. It's just, you have to look at why do these situations begin? You know, why do you get in the initial power struggle that causes these types of violence or something? Cause everybody gets in those situations and everybody, their brain tells them to defend themselves, but it's not necessarily, you know, it doesn't mean you're a horrible person. I mean, it sounds like to me that you're taking stock in your life in ways that most people never even have time to do. They barely ever stop, and they barely, you know, create a Rolodex of bad behavior. I mean, I think you're on the right track. I don't think it's also necessarily bad to have feelings of self-loathing, because it's the beginning of of transformation a lot of times, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. Well, I mean, it is like the interesting thing about this book I'm reading, and actually Crowley's philosophy is like both of them invite you to take a very honest look at your life, at what you are, from an objective perspective as much as you can, so that you objectively just look at everything you've done, analyze why you're as much as you can, why you're doing the things that you're doing, what drives you, what motivates you. And then from that, that's where you know, you can grow, but it doesn't, it's not like the best feeling.
No, but I mean, I think you're an artist, and an artist has a massive advantage because they create work that helps function as a mirror, and you have this massive head start because you have a relationship with yourself through your work, and you can turn yourself upside down and criticize yourself in your work, and it's a much better way of trying to reach that state of objectivity that we're sort of hinting at.
Do you ever think about completely, like, do you ever fantasize about completely abandoning society?
I don't really so much. I'm not necessarily that kind of guy. I was going to ask you if you ever feel like you have, like, like some sort of body of work inside of you that you have to get out and you have to get done because you're afraid. Sometimes you get visions of dying, or you get on a plane and you're like, if I die on this plane, I'll never have, you know, did the work that I needed to do. Do you ever feel like your time is running out, you want to say this really important thing?
Yeah, but I like that book Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, because it kind of tries to push it tries to point out the absurdity in that. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah, go ahead, scream into the cave. Like, it'll echo for a few years and then no one will remember what you said. So instead of like,
yeah, but that was a great moment of human articulation to say that, I think.
Yeah, that's the fucking right. I keep forgetting that paradox in this asshole's book, because he's saying in a book, don't worry about leaving
this
a
super famous guy.
his very success is proving all of his philosophy wrong. Yeah, I know, that's true, man. But yeah, I do think that. But do you ever like, have you seen End of the Void?
I've been recommended that, and I don't think I've seen it yet.
It is so fucking good, and it does a really good job of showing an incarnation. And it just kind of showing the kind of dreamy, sleepwalking way that we go through life, and it just suddenly ends. Like, it just ends, and it shows how all of these, like, kind of mildly bad to extremely bad decisions, the chain reaction that has throughout the world, not just while you're alive, but after you die. The way that it kind of, like, the what you do kind of spreads out around you. And just the kind of, it does a really good job of illuminating the kind of subtle darkness that so many people clamber around in. Not like extreme darkness. Extreme darkness, it's kind of easy to get out of extreme darkness, because you can see clearly how awful what you're doing is, whatever that might. For example, if you're someone who is embezzling, or if you're someone who is cheating on your wife, or if you're someone who's doing some, like, repetitive bad thing, that's kind of easy to get out of because you can just see it. But this is more of like, it's more kind of like that muddy darkness that comes over a person's life, where you tell yourself, I'm a good person, but your decisions are consistently selfish, you know? And how that just sort of leads to that moment where you're like, oh shit, I'm dying. So fuck the great work. How about you have a day where you're not a dick to people before you die? Just one day. Pull off one day where you go through the world not being an asshole and constantly thinking about your own self. I'd like that.
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, that's a very good sentiment to hoist upon the world of entertainment and documentaries that people sit down for an hour and a half and try to ponder, and then you know that they turn it off and they drift out into their foggy fate, you know, and it's just another passing sentiment that doesn't really scare the fuck out of them, you know? Like, it's supposed to be a meditation rod that slaps you on the head, and there's a purpose for fear, you know? I think it gets fucked up in sermons, but the idea of fear of God, I mean, there's a purpose for fear. It's a reason why human beings have developed it, not in a running from a tiger way, but more of like a fear of justifying your life, you know? So I think there's two questions that we skirt around, and one is, how can I achieve some sort of happiness? And then, but when you say stuff like redemption, that's a different question partially. It's like, how do I justify my existence? You know, those are the kind of two different things. Certainly some people achieve one.
Some people what? Say that again.
Some people achieve one of those things more than the other. I'd say most of the mainstream population comes very close to achieving a form of happiness, you know, and then a lot of the great thinkers come closer to justifying their existence, but less of achieving happiness, you know?
Yes. Yeah. 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 I mean, achieving happiness, I can achieve happiness temporarily. Easy. Just give me some Dilaudid and a fucking four wheeler. I can achieve temporary happiness. That's no problem. But that's the, you know, all those things, you're just back in that murky haze. It's like what the that fear that you're talking about in the meditation rod, where when you're meditating, someone whacks you on the fucking head or somebody slaps you with a sandal or whatever it is. It's like opening your, this is the thing, you hear it again and again, open your heart, open your heart, open your heart, open your heart. And that, I think that fear is the initial feeling of your heart opening, maybe that, and you need that terror. You need this sense of like, motherfuck, what am I doing? I gotta stop burning down churches. Literally or metaphorically, you know, I've gotta stop this endless and repetitive aggression and lashing out at the world as it manifests around me. Because the way the world manifests around you is in the people that you know. That's the universe coming to say hello to you. And if you, when it comes to say hello to you, if you're consistently shoving it back and telling it to fuck off, where's that going to get you?
Yeah. Well, and like you were saying, like you remember arguing with people who are now dead, and it teaches you, you know, that life is real, you know, and life, you have a certain amount of time to rectify things. You have to really like be the person that you would like to be, you know, and this is a real morality play. It's not something you're watching that's entertainment for a small period of time or something. This is like real shit. Let the fear take hold of you. Let yourself get scared as fuck and try to refine yourself now.
Yeah. No, what is this insane idea that we're not supposed to be afraid like that? What is this insane idea that we're not supposed to feel shame sometimes, or that we're not supposed to feel dissonance? What is that insane idea? You know, the other day as I was pondering all this stuff, I was thinking to myself, I know the solution. I will just become a complete asshole. That's what I was thinking. It was like, you know, fuck fighting this. Maybe I'm just meant to be an asshole. Maybe I'll just...
Yeah, well, have you ever had a panic attack where you're like, you can't, nothing will make it better. Like you're like jumping out of your skin. It's like maybe you're super over caffeinated and on way too, you know, you've ingested too many drugs or something, like the feeling like death is coming in and nothing will make it better. You know that feeling?
Yes.
Well, that's like the answer to your, hey, I'll just become an asshole and give in to all my, you know, indulgent temptations and just become the thing that my ego wants me to be. Is like, on the other side of that is not pleasure, but is a panic attack where you're just going to be like, this is
what,
you know,
where you're going to be like, what?
Well, on the other side of giving in to your hedonist or your like ego's temptations is a panic attack, basically, that just says this isn't helping either, that nothing can get you out. Like, that's the Four Noble Truths basically saying, you know, these roads are just going to tighten. You know, you have to accept and integrate with the world. You have to be with my people.
Hold on. Shit. All right. Rolling.
Okay. I'm getting my gas, if you can hear me. Debit not allowed? What the fuck? Debit not allowed at this dispenser. Okay, I'm going in to get my gas. I was just going to say that, you know, you can't turn back. It'll do you no good, you know. That these indications of fear are like self-loathing and stuff. It all means you're going the right way. You just keep going that way. If you want redemption, that's why you got there. That's why you are feeling that. Going backwards, giving into your ego, doing all that, I mean, it's not going to make anything better. It's going to be like Eric Clapton going on heroin for 6 years and losing those years. You're going to wake up and things are going to be so much worse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I know, man. That's the fun. So then, right. And then that ends up bringing you back to this place where, like, all right, well, you know, I imagine that at some point I'm going to have an emotional compass that always points in the direction of being loving to people. But until that happens, I'm just going to fake it. I'll just be fake loving to people, because it's still better than being an honest asshole, right? Isn't it better to be fake loving than to be an honest asshole?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's a reason for being alone, you know, too, that there's a reason why you need to be alone a lot of the times, and maybe not in a relationship. And then hopefully when you do find love, it's not through the twisted prism of some other incredibly unhealthy person that mistreats you, because you'll know you're getting love, but you'll be getting it from like a sick source. You know, it's like, go ahead and be alone and repair yourself and refine yourself and make the great art of your life. And then, you know, when you do fall in love, it'll probably be part of this larger plan of your development, but it won't cure you of anything, you know?
Yeah, when I fall in love, it's going to be with an android.
Isn't that an Elton John song? long was all of this?
It's about an hour. By the time I get emotionally equipped enough to be in a relationship, I will definitely have access to androids that'll just be perfectly, perfectly tuned to my personality.
I'll buy you one for your birthday.
What a great gift. What a funny, shitty gift to give people just to ruin their lives. Like, give your friend in a great marriage an android that's like a perfect sex robot.
Well, you know, once you, it's like Maslow's hierarchy, you know, once you satisfy the bottom of the triangle, you know, you can get back to your higher purposes.
Yeah. Well, I officially repent. I repent. I'm going to, after I finish this podcast, I'm going to go into my room and I'm going to whip myself.
Why don't you, I'll be on tour for the next 2 weeks, but, oh shit, I'm not going to see you. Well, the dates are up on the Grails Facebook if anybody wants to come party. Otherwise, I'll have to see you in April.
I'll put the links up there. I wish we could play Altar in the Woods. Everybody, Emil found a song that him and I recorded in college that's just, and he mastered it, and it's amazing, but I can't play it yet. But wow, it's really cool.
We'll play it on the next one, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about those times some.
So everyone, go see Emil on tour. I'll post his dates up on the website. And what else do you have to say to the world, Emil?
I'm gonna try to not run out of gas and try to get to Chicago tonight and tip a couple back for you and pray for your redemption is what I'm gonna do.
Thank you, brother. All right. See you later, Emil. Thanks, man.
Okay. Bye. I'll talk to you really soon.
Okay, bye. That was Emil Amos. And now please listen to this sweet song. I don't think I've played it on this podcast, but I may have. It's called The Sun Shines Down on Me, and it's from the album The Late Great Daniel Johnston. Buy it through the Amazon portal or get it on iTunes and give us a sweet rating on iTunes, won't you? I love you.
I'm getting closer to the fact I've turned my back on silly dreams. Walking down that lonely road in my heavy load, I didn't bother to bring it when the sun shines down on me. I feel like I deserve it when the sun shines down. I'm hiding out where you can't see, behind a wall, in the back of the room. I'm crawling slowly through the dark and feeling for a punchline. When the sun shines down on me, I want to feel like I deserve it when the sun shines down. I'm walking down that but it ain't empty now, because I'm on it, and I'm getting closer to a hope that I can carry and take home with me when the sun shines down on me. I feel like I